Accession number 27814, this is David Butt, Reel 13. Now, your next posting was to be your last posting, and perhaps we'll look at that posting, and during, while looking at why you came out, which you sort of flagged up a bit in the last time. Now, what was the posting you got? This is in September 1962 to HMS President. Now, that's just a catch-all. What were you actually posted to?
I was posted to the main signal office of HMS President, which is the centre of all communications worldwide, not just for the Navy, but there's also a relay station for all three forces. Signals are flying backwards and forwards constantly between all three forces, between countries, ships, basically anything military is liable to come through Whitehall, although it was a naval signal station. Obviously there's a lot of traffic that had to be between all three services and the like. The duties there varied. I mean, I forget how many in the actual.
Where was it actually based?
It was based in Whitehall itself, HMS President, as they call it, but it is the Whitehall ComSen Communications Centre. It's not really the Ministry of Defence, but it's part of. And it's right central, complete right opposite the Whitehall Theatre. This is in Whitehall itself.
Now, what was a typical day's duties for you?
Yeah, well, they vary, because when you first went there, not knowing anything about the operations, you sort of started in probably the simplest job, which may have been just marking up signals, looking through a book, and checking where the signal had come from, where it was to go to, etc. And marking it up for the distribution, and then you would sort of work up to various areas, and the main job, apart from the supervisor of the comm centre itself, was router, and that is always a leading signalman's job, and that's where I ended up most of the time. And in that particular function, you actually know off by heart the call sign of practically every shore establishment in the world, certainly the major ones that are constantly getting signals back and forth. It's just, you just remember them, and you can sit there and you can pick up the signal, and it says Singapore, and you write down the call sign. And then it's shot off to whichever way it's going to go, by radio or tape relay or teleprinter or whatever, it's shot off to another room. So I spent most of the time there on that side of it. And then...
Sounds a bit dull.
It is dull, but it's during the day anyway, it's very busy. You don't really get a chance to think about it. It is constant. The signals are piling up and up. The more experienced you are at it, you can keep on top of it and just farming them through. Anybody that's fairly new at it, you can see the in tray going up and up and up, and somebody will have to go and help. But it's not, that is not the be all and end all. Nobody is trusted 100% to say that everything's gone to the right place. They have checkers. A couple of checkers, which I also did for a while, both watch keeping and then on a day basis.
So the checker would have a glance at them and say, yeah, that looks right. And if they were worried, they'd check it by actually looking it up.
Yeah, they go through every single transmission from the previous day or during the watch, if it happens to be on the watch. And occasionally it is double checked, because, as I say, I went on a... I worked days for a while, and you go through everything that's even been checked and you check it again.
So your thing was just routing things out. You didn't have anything to do with things coming in.
Well, yeah, I mean, everything that you're routing out has probably come in
right,
from
sorry.
Somewhere else. Yeah,
got you. Sorry.
Because, I mean, signals are originated from Whitehall, obviously, if necessary, but they're also the main function, or the busiest function, is, if you like, is a relay station. Everything comes through Whitehall. I mean, for instance, when you're at sea, you very rarely send a signal between ships without coupling it to Amalty. So that's the stuff that comes in and just is distributed to whoever you think needs to see it, and that's a separate function from the actual relay side. You could get a signal coming with 20 or 30 addressees on it, and you've got to put the code, call code, for every one of them on there, and then send it through to whoever. And you get somebody comes in and clears the out tray, and they bomb it out to the right people. During my time there, my promotion came through.
Now, what difference does that make? That's to yeoman of signal.
None. the reason was...
More money, I presume, but...
More money, yeah.
Job stayed the same.
More money, changing it. Yeah, because I'd already been put as supervisor of the watch at one stage, as well as a leading hand. After I'd promoted to yeoman, I was still supervisor of the watch. Yes, you get more money, you change your uniform. The first year you don't change your uniform, you're acting yeoman. So you keep the same uniform, but you put your yeoman's badge up. And then after a year, you get the new uniform with the black cap, etc. But the job doesn't change, no.
And you'd be on days, nights?
No, you still carry on watch keeping, except for this period I had on days. And I think that was towards the end.
This is your last posting. Yeah. You know, it's been quite a long career. But why? And you stayed there longer. Now, why were you leaving the Navy after this posting? One thing, you got married.
That's right.
Had any impact on you.
Yes, it did. It was always said in the Navy that, if you're due to leave after 12 years, the Navy is determined to get you to sign on for another 10, if they can. And one way they used to do it, was the assumption anyway, is to lull you into a false sense of security. You'd have a nice cushy number for a few months or a couple of years or whatever before you were due out, and you think, oh, this is a great life, you know. I'll sign on. It didn't work with me.
Now, why didn't it work?
Well, when I came home from Singapore, I officially met my wife properly. I'd met her before, because my grandmother was a matchmaker. So my wife worked as a hairdresser just around the corner from where we lived, where my grandmother went, and she was always talking about me to the girls in there, apparently. They used to see me go past in uniform in the days when you had to wear uniform. And Marion used to do her hair, and she thought, oh, she's a nice girl. I'll see what I can do. And I used to get magazines from Canada, from my aunt in Canada. And she always used to say, oh, take those round to Marion, around the hairdressers, you see. So I used to take them round. I used to walk in the reception, give them the receptionist, and I could give them to Marion, and I'd walk out again. And that was it. But while I was in Singapore, again, grandmother got her to write to me. And so we started writing. And when I came home, I saw her, actually the very first day home, I saw her as she left work, because I bought her a couple of rabbits, as we call them, presents. And took it from there. We actually got engaged within about 5 weeks, and planned to get married in August. And that's, of course, when I went off to Mercury. So all the planning was unfortunately left to Marion and her mum. I just came home. I was getting married on the Saturday after I'd finished the course. So my stag party was the end of course party as well up in Mercury. Went to Whitehall, and so I had this long period which I couldn't understand why I was there for so long. It didn't seem to make sense to me, particularly as I'd just been promoted, and I thought, well, it's obvious that, you know, they're deciding to leave me here and hoping that I'll say, okay, yeah, well, I'll sign on now.
Now, why didn't you?
Well, partly because of the slowness of promotion. That time was definitely dead man's shoes for chief yeoman. It was, the average time was 7 years.
Which is most of the 10 you'd be signing on.
That's right. It was, I mean, it probably came down, I don't know, but the estimate was with the chiefs that were in the Navy, and they were over the top on chiefs because they used to promote them after a certain time, and in the end realised they didn't need a Navy. The big ships were disappearing, and chief yeomen were mainly on big ships. It was normally only yeomen on small. So they were just floating around with next to nothing to do. They were instructors in a lot of cases, went to Ganges and places like that, just to really get them out of the way. I thought, well, 7 years promotion is a bit pointless to me, plus the fact that I'm almost certain, because I've spent 3 years in Whitehall, that my next draft will be abroad and to a ship. Now, my wife had always hoped that I'd get a posting abroad where she'd go as well, because there were some. They were dwindling, beginning to dwindle. Like Malta, there's a lot of fellas had their wives in Malta. Quite a few in Singapore barracks had their wives. On ships, you weren't allowed to take your wife anyway. So I thought, well, it's almost certain that, you know, having just got married not that long ago, had a child, I will be sent abroad for 18 months, and I'm not going to risk it. So I thought, well, out I go. And I'd started, luckily being in Whitehall, I had the opportunity to actually go to job interviews and the like. So I started looking. I did the police exam as a stopgap. I didn't want to go in the police particularly, but I thought, well, I'll take the exam. And they actually said to me, oh, you realise if you join the police, you will be 30 years old, and most of them will be 18 and 19. How do you get on, you know, with that? I said, well, that's nothing unusual. A lot of fellows on board are 18 and 19. It's just one of those things, you know, you get used to. I didn't say I didn't particularly want to join, but so I took the exam, which I passed, and then I went for various interviews. Now, the jobs open to fellows from my branch were limited. It was tape relay, which was shift work, you know, teleprinter work, shift work, anything to do with signals was shift work. Or you could go to diplomatic corps, which I didn't particularly fancy, and it was almost certainly moving from billet to post again. I didn't want that either at that stage. The only other one that was actually offered, and again, because we were in Whitehall, we actually had the big banks coming in and saying, we want bank messengers in the city. You know. One or two fellows said, oh, we might consider that. Which was considered to be a good job, in fact, in the city, and still is to a degree, although it's been downgraded quite a lot now. So I went for various interviews. I went to Marley Tiles in Sevenoaks. I was offered that job, but again, it was tape relay, it was shift work. Sevenoaks was an expensive place to move to, so I thought, well, we can't afford to move down there anyway. And I'm not commuting from London to Sevenoaks, so I forgot that one. I nearly took a job with an ex-naval fellow advertised for ex-navy. He was just starting up a Venetian blind company, and he wanted somebody to work with him, and he wanted the devil he knew. He said, I want somebody from the Navy because I know how they work, and et cetera, et cetera, and I know what they're like. But again, he was just starting up, and the initial part of that job was just driving around measuring windows for Venetian blinds. I mean, he could well be a Persian millionaire now, wouldn't surprise me. You know, but I thought, no, that's not for me either. I hadn't been driving a lot, obviously. You know, I'd passed some tests, but I hadn't really driven a lot. I didn't fancy driving a van around London in particular. So I said no. I told him I didn't really fancy that. And then I saw this one advertised at Overton Partners, structural engineers, very large structural engineers in London, for an admin stoke clerical type person. Not much more than that, didn't know any more about it, but I went up for the interview and they showed me roughly what it was. It was all to do with drawings, etc., looking after drawings and that type of thing. So I thought, well, you know, looks like might be fairly interesting, or develop into a fairly interesting job. And the aim, the fellas coming out of the Navy at that stage, the aim was to get £1,000 a year. They thought if they got £1,000 a year to start, that was quite a good figure, good salary. This company offered me 960. I thought, well, I'll take it. So that was it. I ended up there. And
now, what was the procedure of leaving the Navy? How did that show?
Well, to leave the Navy, all they did was they sent me down to Portsmouth Barracks. Being at Whitehall, of course, I hadn't had a top for...
This is September 65.
Yeah, I hadn't had a top for 3 years at Whitehall. You don't get tops at onshore establishments like that. If you're living at home anyway, you don't. So I thought, oh, a couple of days in Portsmouth Barracks, you know, doing the leaving routine, at least I'll get a top, you know. And it's just you go around various departments, you go to, you know, they give you another medical to come out with, you know, you take all the excess kit back, etc., etc. They insist that you return kit, whether they want it or not. Basically, what they want is anything that's worth keeping. You know, the fellas in the stores will keep it for themselves. The rest will go in the rubbish tip, basically. But it's just 2 days routine of finishing off. But I didn't get a top because they decided that I wouldn't be living in the barracks. I'd be living in one of the B&B, naval B&B places in Portsmouth town. So that was it. Just a couple of days in Portsmouth. Discharge papers, away you go, that's it.
Now, how about your post, so how did you do at the engineering firm Arabs?
Well, that,
would that to be your career?
Well, not the bit I started with didn't. I mean, it was looking after, it was the beginning of industrialised building in the 60s. And I don't know if you remember the Ronan Point fiasco and all that sort of thing.
Not too much detail, I think, no, probably, because no. It's really, we just want to get you settled back into civilian life. Do you see what I mean?
Yeah. You know, I started off, I'd say, as an admin clerical post, and our route was growing at that stage. They decided that our particular area, our particular division, needed to move to another building, which they took down in Soho Square. And of course, first thing I said, who's going to organise the move? And immediately, he's not engineering, he's admin, he can do it. And it developed from there. I organised the move, I became what they like to call the house manager down in that one. More people moved into that building, so the job expanded. The architectural side of the practice was breaking away, or trying to break away to be autonomous. I was mainly looking after them because their demands were always more than the engineering side, from my point of view. And they said to me, well, when we move away completely, we want you to come as our office manager or premises manager, whatever it's going to be called at the time. Unfortunately, the Overt partnership wouldn't let them break away completely autonomous on the financial side. They wouldn't let them break away. So the job was beginning to stagnate. They were so settled that the job was dwindling. So I decided to move. So I saw another job advertised at a petrochemical company in Colindale. We were living in Mill Hill at the time, so it was local. I thought, well, that's ideal. They're looking for an office manager. So I applied for that. And funnily enough, my boss over also applied for it, unbeknown to me. He was a structural engineer who'd moved over to the admin side. And I was offered that job at Colindale, and that was to form a completely new office from scratch. They were over in Park Royal, and they'd taken this new office from scratch. There was nothing there.
Now, would you, that's about as far as, yeah, would your naval experience valuable to you in these jobs?
I think from the organisational point of view, yes, very much so. From the point of view of overseeing other staff, yes, because I always had to, as the job developed. I obviously have to oversee a lot of contractors as well, which you don't do in the Navy, but it's all much the same thing. But it's attention to detail, I think, as much as anything else. And as I say, the fact that you are used to dealing with a mixture of people, having to get along with them, not always agreeing necessarily with what you're having to do or what they're asking you to do or whatever, but you're still doing it and you still have to do it.
Did you ever think of wanting to go back to the Navy? Because some people leave the services and want to go. You never did.
No, I don't think so. I don't think so.
You were enjoying what you were doing.
I enjoyed what I was doing. Well, I was beginning to get, again, and still got, is the travel bug. And that never leaves you, I don't think.
Now, what about your membership of the Royal Naval Association? Is that important to you? That's how we got to you, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, that was... when I left the Navy, when you actually leave the Navy, they do ask you to join the Royal Naval Association. Now, at that stage, to the best of my knowledge, the only branch I was told about was HMS President, again, which was the ship on the Thames, which is still there, but it's not the RNA headquarters anymore, I don't think. So I said, right, you know, I don't particularly want to travel up to town to attend meetings, so no, it's not for me. And completely forgot about it then, and I didn't really know that there were other branches floating around. Never inquired about it. And it wasn't until I moved to Boreham Wood and joined the British Legion. And one of the fellows on the committee in the British Legion was also in the RNA, and of course he immediately told Chairman, he was Chairman then, Peter Collins, and within a few days I'd got a call from Peter Collins, oh, I hear you've just joined the British Legion, your ex-Navy, would you like to join the Royal Naval Association? And we meet, at that time they met in a pub, because they'd just been kicked out of the electricity board headquarters. And really went from there.
Is it important to you? What value do you get from it? What does it do for you as an association?
Yeah, I mean, it's important in as much as you you sort of get back into a bit of a routine with the people. You talk the same language, you know, I mean, this is the thing. You get the same sense of humour as much as anything else. The naval sense of humour and the comradeship, I think, is vastly different to any other service, because of the confined atmosphere, really. And it begins to come back, and you get the Royal Naval Association. I mean, mates, they are mainly, as you know, old boys. You know, a lot of them 10 years older than me. Some not far different. Unfortunately, they can't get the younger ones to join. This is a real problem. They're going to fade away before long, as will the British Legion. I mean, it's that, the social events they organise, the pure fact that they are there for the benefit of everybody else, for every individual, including the widows, various charities they contribute to, supporting other organisations, supporting the British Legion, and the British Legion would, you know, struggle without us now, I think, down there. It's just the sort of thing that, you know, it's nice to be back, to be part of. So unfortunately, it's a problem. Obviously, they tried to get me roped into just about, I was on the committee within no time, because I was one of the youngest and a full member. Again, about practically 50% of the members down there are associate members, you see, they were never in the Navy full time. I've also been in the Navy longer than anybody else down there, you know. I mean, the longest period was, for most of them, was just the war years, depending on when they actually went in. Nearly all of them came out immediately afterwards, nobody stayed. I mean, there's one fellow there that very proud of the fact that he went to Ganges. I mean, he only went to Ganges for a few weeks. National Service. OHO, whichever he was, and you know, but it's carried on. This is the thing. I mean, these organisations are all carrying on. A lot of them, Ganges Association is massive. You know, it's still going. You know, so it's, yeah, it's just to stay involved, basically. But unfortunately, I don't think I'll survive too long.
Thank you very much.